Yo team, welcome to Dire Beauty. Welcome to Dire Beauty, OP person in the second row. Welcome to Dire Beauty, calling all sacred clowns, and here you are, all the sacred clowns. Fantabulous. So, those of you who've been hanging with me before know we begin with Muti. Muti comes from the Sangomas of South Africa, and Muti means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. So we're gathered at this powerful time, dark of moon before an eclipse, late Monday evening, early Tuesday for the West Coast, for the East Coast. So the dark of the moon, especially before an eclipse, was traditionally when all the elders, regardless of our extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment, would gather to determine the course of culture. So Muti, I have tobacco from once beautiful Syria, may it be so again. I have coyote hair from my friend Stella Coyote. And so we say, O spirit of the compassionate trickster sacred clown within each one of us, open the path before us that we may be of greatest good, contribute our medicine to the community in ways that are most serious and dedicated fun. Wah! Okay. So, yes, it is Dire Beauty calling all sacred clowns. Here we are, the astro, mytho, political, democratic, animism, pre-eclipse, dark of moon, grand square, and cardinal signs, coyote's choreography of creation. Yes, so it is time to align with nature's evolutionary ingenuity. And again, as some of you have been hanging with me before, and some of you are here going, what? But we say, you know, trickster ingenuity is that in nature which we find in coyotes, in ravens, in seeds that sprout after cataclysm. It's that ingenious intelligence that comes alive at a moment of chaos. You know, and people who are, you know, biological historians say, what if predator prey, what if crisis is one of the great evolutionary engines on this planet? What if the crises we are facing now is a huge opportunity for our species to become smarter and more polite, too? You know, we wonder what is unique about our human species aside from our extraordinary rudeness. And we might say, our capacity to borrow qualities of intelligence from plants and animals. So as we journey along together, and then forevermore telepathically, because it is great to be incarnationally coinciding with the likes of ourselves at this time, you know, think also, begin thinking now and this powerful night and tomorrow about what we love, what we have an affinity for, what animal, what plant, and what is the quality of that medicine. You know, some people love chamomile as a mascot because the more you step on it, the better it grows. So that's good for some people. So we'll play with this, but we say opportunity does indeed abound. So here we are, dark of moon before an eclipse at a powerful time. So how many people have noticed in the field, the interesting field, the energetic field, some turbulence, some topsy-turvy qualities, especially in the last week, even just, whoa, here we go, and everybody else is enlightened. So how do we maintain our balance? You know, and, you know, Homer's Odyssey begins with this great line. He says, sing to me, O muse, and through me tell the story. So we're going to close with that before we deconvene so that everyone can feel that they are an agent of the desirable story. So we critique and go, and then we do the desirable story. You know, the trickster medicine that I love and that convene every Monday night, you ask me how you can join, you know, is that quality that says we are willing to be agents of evolutionary intelligence at this time of dire beauty. Against all odds are the odds that trickster likes. So there's a part of us that's been waiting backstage going, against all odds? Perfect, now is perfect, we bound on stage. But Homer's Odyssey, sing to me, O muse, and through me tell the story, it says, you know, part of our dynamic is literalizing metaphors. So each one of us has, you know, a magic mirror. And we say, the secular critic within all of us holds up the mirror and goes, look, it sucks, in detail. And then the trickster, with a wave of the hand, turns the mirror into a window, but look how beautiful it could be. And then with another wave of the hand, turns the mirror into a door, let's go. So mirror, window, door is something, again, to take with us all in practice, because we do want to, you know, I also recommend strongly that in our magic backpacks, you know, we are metaphorically agile at shape-shifting. We go, that sense of burden and weight, and the backstage gods whisper, that's not so much your depression, it's your magic backpack you've been wearing for 40 years, and it's very heavy. Why don't you take it off and pour forth its contents and see what's inside, everything we need. Look, Dorothy's slippers and the magic mirror, you know, and all of those things. And also in each person's invisible magic backpack that is by your seat, you can take away with you, you know, is a harumphitude composter, which folds into nothing, but is useful to bring out at any moment and go, because communication and storytelling are best after we've composted harumphitude into useful nutrient, going, wow. But there's a lot to get our goats. We also want to animate our goats, our symbol of our Saturn, our authority, our autonomy. So our goats may get gotten, but then they come back even friskier than before, and this is a useful metaphor. So many of you, again, may know where we got that term, you know, somebody got our goat. Do we know where that comes from? It comes from racehorses were given a companion goat that was their best friend that would keep them calm, and bad people before a race would get a horse's goat. So when we say somebody got our goat, somebody got our authority, somebody whatever, but it comes back friskier. But there's a lot of opportunities for goat getting right now, and how do we here be dedicated to being agents of cool response in an increasingly hot, reactive world? How can we enter into any situation as an agent of cool? Saturn is cool. You know, it's the cool god. Our word cool comes from Yoruba word kulukulu, which meant completely responsible. The cool guy or the cool Gaia, you know, was the person who took care of the community. A cool passage of drumming was just the drummer, the drum, the divine, no overplaying, just the thing. And in Yoruba, like in English, kulukulu means cool like temperature. So the Yoruba said, you know, language is magic as we know, and this technology in a sense says when we literally, and let's do it now, imagine our heads as cool, and we put all the hot in our heads into our hearts where it belongs, you know, then we are agents of cool response, not caught up in hot reaction. If we love freedom and democracy, to react to anything, you know, is to carry around a portable prison for ourselves and for others. To cultivate an ever larger repertoire of responses is to ally ourselves with nature's evolutionary ingenuity. And then again, we are agents of cool response in a hot world. So may we all be that. You know, so this powerful time, it's the death and resurrection show in many ways. There's a great book by a man named Rogan Taylor. It's out of print, but you're all good detectives. And he decides to take the entire history of the originating impulse behind gathering and theater. And he said it was always, like what we're doing now, it was always to call in power. We don't source power, we invite it. We invite it with the likes of ourselves, sacred clowns, calling in power, and then we offer it a story to animate. You know, all around the world, you know, standing stones on equinoxes and solstices where the sun illumines the painting or the writing at the back of the cave. So what's going on there? It's a form of powerful sympathetic magic, symbolic magic. O light of sun, come on in. O power, come on in. And here's the template we are offering you to animate. Here's the story. So now especially in our own personal lives and collective lives, we want to animate the desirable story. You know, again, critique and then guide our own attention and other people's attention to that quality. So he called it the Death and Resurrection Show. And in his history of theater, he starts way back cave paintings 30,000 years ago. How many people here saw the Cave of Forgotten Dreams? Oh, what a good audience, yes. Oh, that's really, really great. With grumpy old Werner Herzog narrating, which was perfect, because there was no kind of overlay of, you know, New Age fantasy about it, just wonder. These incredible paintings of animals emerging from rock. And we know that these paintings were in hard-to-get-to places. They weren't necessarily, their primary purpose was not to be seen. It was to do magic, to invite in the animal powers. And then from the Cave of Forgotten Dreams, we know that people were gathering in that particular cave for over 5,000 years. Incredible painting of horse emerging from rock. You know, and then 5,000 years later, somebody added another horse, and we go, wow, that is continuity. And they know that from the fire pit and the flutes, you know, that people would, and the paintings on the wall, that people would then shadow dance between the fire and the paintings with the paintings to bring them alive. So in a sense, we get to do that in our minds together here too, which is calling it in. We might say, as we wonder, you know, what is the root issue in the world? How do we track it? And we might say the world's misunderstanding of power as dominance and control. And Pluto, Captain Death and Rebirth would say, dominance is the toxic mimic of power, you know, and control. Let go of control so true power can come in. Some wonderful woman whose name I don't know, but says, listen for your destiny, and when it calls, release your plans. You know, so it's a very fluid time. You know, and in the history, the Death and Resurrection show, he tracks from cave paintings and then on up through Greek theater and African theater and theater around the world, and then, you know, medieval mystery plays, and then on into Hollywood. And he says, in everyone's mythological DNA, in our bones and blood, we know when we go even to a movie that something amazing is supposed to happen, but usually it doesn't. And the modern world compensates by saying, let's just crank up the volume or have more men fighting in, you know, high places at the end of the movie. And also just as a quirky footnote, a friend of mine, a jolly Aztec and Mayan actual scholar, not a New Age scholar, but says, hey, team, for those who are having 2012 withdrawal, the Aztec calendar ends October 2nd, 2027, so get ready to fetishize that date. You know, for the Aztecs, though, different than the Mayans, gloomier. For the Aztecs, each eon was born of and will die of its thematic element. So in the Aztec calendar, which ends October 2nd, 2027, we're in an era which is born of and will die of busyness, earthquake, shake, busyness. And we go, well, there's that. So we can put that to one side because we're not engaged in a fixed future or a predictive model. In fact, one of the qualities of now, as I introduce the planets, you know, and we can feel, you know, them within us and without, you know, as we animate them. But so we want to feed each part of us. But it's a fluid, you know, every culture grows its own astrology or its own stories. So if one were growing up in 14th century feudal India, your life would be very predictable. So there's a very predictive astrology there. But we are engaged in a different dynamic of becoming unpredictable. So to begin to introduce and animate the story and see if it resonates within you. So the planets are real, but like everything real is real and also symbolic. We live in a symbolic creation. So the planets represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world. So as I introduce all the kind of players now in this dynamic, extraordinary and beautiful symmetry, you know, feel it resonate. When I do individual readings for people on phone or Skype or sometimes in person, mostly it's phone or Skype, and when I look at my calendar go, in person, God, change the cat litter, all right. But we say, you know, an astrological birth chart is a chart of a moment in time. You know, it is symbolically a literal map and a symbolic map of each person's navigating instructions to themselves at this moment and how they participate, how they cultivate their own unique medicine and contribute it to the world at this time. You know, but we also animate the metaphor. We say real map, symbolic map of each person's interior community, the inner democracy of each person. In each one of us lives these planets that connects us to a larger deal. So part of the, you know, extraordinary dynamic of now, as I begin to introduce them, the outer planets, Pluto, Uranus, and Neptune, large by energetic symbolism, even if not by mass in Pluto's case, Pluto, Uranus, Neptune represent huge forces of nature's evolutionary intelligence. And they're the keepers of the whole big frame story in which we're all navigating. So part of the dynamic of now is Pluto at 13 degrees of Capricorn, straight down there. Pluto's in Capricorn, the structure of the world. Death and rebirth is in the structure of the world. So we know that dominance and empire are collapsing. bridges, infrastructure, dental work, you know, whatever, you know, all those things are going down. And Pluto squares 90-degree angle to Uranus, the trickster, the spirit of ingenuity. And we say rising from the collapse of old empire and colonialism and dominance is culture of reverent ingenuity. Collaborate with everything. And it behooves all of us to be storytellers, to invite the awakened, ingenious, disobedient, creative intelligence in everyone to participate. You know, and that requires, again, metaphoric agility and linguistic agility. So I love my friend Bob Goff, who lives on Native American Indian reservations doing renewable energy. But he will talk to anybody, and so may it be so, will we. So when he talks to, you know, right-wing Christian groups, he has a PowerPoint in which he says, we don't want the fuels from hell, fracking and oil and coal. No, we want the fuels from heaven, sun and wind, you know, which is completely true. And just again, a willingness to translate our capacity to speak across borders. So I still, for whatever mysterious reason, live just outside Washington, D.C. on your behalf. Think of me as your agent there. And in wondering, you know, when I might move to a citadel of grooviness like California, I ponder. It's an ongoing mystery. But one of the things that I do there as a dedication is cross borders. So I go to the Conservative Political Action Conference to dive into the underworld with Tea Party people and everything, carrying my harumphitude composter, very important, like before one speaks, you know, going, is there a common story we can find? Because he or she, all of us, who creates the most all-inclusive invitational story wins, but wins in the biggest sense, like wonderful James Carse, author of Finite and Infinite Games, who says a finite game is about winning, an infinite game is about keeping everything in play. You know, and again, we want this collaboration of humans and wolves and right-wing golfers and inner-city youth and everything right now. You know, but again, to direct collective attention to the most important central conversation of how do we heal our species' relationship to the rest of our kin on this beautiful planet, and how do we come into accord in a humble way, you know, with nature. So I like to say, let's compost. Pluto does provide us this giant cauldron, recycling cauldron, into which we can throw things from our own personal lives and also our collective lives that we no longer need. And Pluto is happy to, in the cauldron, digest this and burp with great satisfaction. So dominance in. You know, let's compost again, you know, the arrogance of humanism, humans as the measure of all things, you know, and ladle out the truth of animism. Everything's alive. So we speak to the ancient, archaic, wise part of all of us that's coming alive now, that knows that everything is alive. You know, and we also just love, you know, serendipitous synchronicity, which gives us faith that it's not just us. We're in this larger dance, like the giving of this wonderful yellow rose. Thank you. It's perfect because some years back I was invited to a water conference. Some of you may have heard the story, but you can chant along. And it was the world's leading engineers on water, sweet water and salt water. And the morning was the problems, which are enormous, enormous, the issues of water. So the engineers and America's cold fusion physicist guy and the Coast Guard and Homeland Security and everyone were there. And some of the things that are on the direness of now is the glaciers melting, the River Ganges could cease running. You know, huge things that we want to not look away from, that we want to know. But unbeknownst to me, I mean, I've been invited to go as a guest, but I saw on the program, it said, and Caroline Casey will lead a water blessing ceremony during lunch. And I'm like, I will? Oh my God, okay. What? These are scientists. I'm not gonna mention the astrology right up front. But as I, you know, approached, and they're all, it was sponsored by the Swedish Embassy and Bill Hazeltine, who made a gazillion dollars at Gentech, and you know, other kind of powerful people and engineers and scientists. But somebody gave me a bunch of yellow roses, as you just gave me this wonderful yellow rose. And I go, oh, it wants to happen. Yellow roses are sacred to Venus, Oshun, the goddess of sweet water. And so I told them this story. They were all eating their lunch and blah, 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 blah. And I knew I just had 5 minutes to tell them everything important that I knew in the world. And I just sit, and they're all busy, you know, and talking, and I go, in everyone's heart lives the myth of the restoration of the waters of life. And all the scientists stopped, you know, fork midway and put it down and wanted to be there. And after I told them everything I know in 5 minutes, I said, and here's these beautiful yellow flowers sacred to Oshun, the goddess of the water. Let's go down to the Potomac River. We were right on its banks. And all of them, Homeland Security, power-possessing beings, physicists, engineers, Coast Guard, all threw yellow roses into the Potomac River as a signal of their willingness to work with water to heal the problems we'd inflicted on water. Again, the invitation. So, and it was because of the gift of the yellow roses that I knew we could do it. You know, it was like there was a call and response going, ooh, thank you so much. And then the next day, I didn't have to do anything formal, but again, internal dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. Some things are always true, but there are times when they're even truer. And now is one of those times. Internal dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. So the next day I showed up, and on the banks of the Potomac River, and there's press, and again, Homeland Security, and Coast Guard, and everybody. And there's a man who has an extraordinary machine that runs on just one tablespoon of gasoline and the rest on water, but it wasn't working. So, you know, great tension and embarrassment. And I did not mention Mercury was retrograde. but so the cold fusion physicist steps up and says, I think it needs more pressure. And he leaned on the machine, nothing. And then I just sensed the moment. And I stepped in and I put one hand on the inventor, you know, and one hand on the machine and said to the inventor, do you vow that this technology will never be used for war? And he said, I do. And the engine went, va-va-boom. Okay. So the hard-nosed scientists were so delighted. The innocent dignity of their child heart had been brought back alive that it wasn't just us. There's this call and response. You know, and that night at the party, you know, Indian engineer says, I am from India, I am strict science, I grew up to throw it, but you have given me permission to be both, to be more. You know, and I go, pragmatic mysticism, they used to love each other. We are re-wedding what has been falsely sundered as a mean trick of the reality police to render people obedient to, you know, external authority. And then the cold fusion physicist guy came up and he said, well, all physicists are mystics. And then everybody wanted to be a mystic. And there we go. So that quality, that willingness, and what happened at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, is that, you know, again, I've told this before, but I love it so, is there were all these kind of right-wing Ayn Rand Austrian economists, you know, with walking around with blind right-wing, it really looked like a cartoon. So I had to pull out my Herumphitude composter going, so that then when the Austrian Ayn Rand economists, all of whom were named Wolfgang apparently, came up and said, you know, and I was really dressed, you know, as I am. I was not in any conservative disguise. But people liked it. They go, well, how playful. Even, you know, old right-wing codgers were like, that's playful. Like your boots, you know. Anyway, but they said, so if our attitude is playful rather than, you know, because we're all here to move our emotional default setting to, from whatever it is, to woof, woof, want to play. So he came up and he said, you, who are you? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And he said, that is so cool. Okay. So, see, if I'd said I'm a, you know, spiritual channeling feminist environmentalist, you know, nothing. Okay. One is, hadn't ever heard of it before, so no defense. Whatever people have heard before, especially a word that ends with IST, you know, there's a little prison waiting for it already. But if something fresh, then it liberates everybody. And here's where we get to the trickster redeemer. The trickster redeemer, very different from the conventional hero. The trickster redeemer, often a woman, right now the moon in Uranus, but the woman within us all, she is interested, like Scheherazade in the Arabian Nights, in liberating women, liberating the land, liberating men, liberating all creatures, but liberating even the tyrant who has hardened his own heart. And it's this trickster redeemer that we find in so many places and folktales. You know, in the South, it's High John the Conqueror, about whom it's said that he came over, you know, with the slaves, with those enslaved, and was syncretized from many, many different traditions. And they said at first he was a spirit. You know, he was not a man, but a spirit, a will to live and to transcend tyranny. And then that spirit began to incarnate and take on form and vitality. You know, and the thing about High John is that he would liberate everyone, even the slave master, and finish it all off with a laugh. You know, so again, it's said of High John that he did not go away, but he goes to reside in High John the Conqueror route, which is this wonderful route you can get from, you know, in New Orleans or Lucky Mojo Supply Company in, you know, Sebastopol, whatever. But that's an important mythic theme. It also says King Arthur, at the end of the Grail legend, you know, did not die. He went off to Avalon to go take yoga with women in Pilates classes to await the world's call at a time of dire necessity, to call upon positive yang to dance with positive yin. We go, now would be really, really good, you know. So the trickster redeemer is interested again in liberating everybody, and also don't think you know. Part of the subversive, extraordinary value of this language of astrology is everyone has what these planets represent within them. In different arrangements, in different assignments, there's no one as unique as each one of us. You know, but whatever we speak to in another is that part of them we are inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. Which is why, you see, when we're finger-waggy and judging, if we haven't used our harumphitude composter, then we're inviting the least interesting, least evolved part of somebody else to dance with the least interesting part of us, and we can see what's going on in the world. And we go, no, cooling it all out. So the planets, again, representing these humming, vital qualities of intelligence are ways of organizing the story. So we have Pluto, you know, death, rebirth, square Uranus in Aries, again, our kinship with animals and plants. So we all get to think, as the cave paintings almost always depicted, a part human, part animal being. We are nothing without the animals. You know, on Wall Street, one of the terms that's used for economic depression, or one of the causes of economic depression, the financial term they use is, it's a loss of animal spirits. They go, ooh, if only they knew they were speaking true mythology. You know, and so to introduce again everybody, Mars is right now rising in the east at 12 Libra. It was at 13 last week. Jupiter's storytelling god is right up there at 14 Cancer. It was at 13. Uranus, the trickster, is at 13 Aries, right next to the moon. And Pluto's at 13 Capricorn. So it's called a grand square. They're all at 90 degree angles. And I love squares. They are assignments to get illusorily estranged principles to dance together in us and in the world. So part of the riptide of now is that Pluto, lord of underworld, I mean, we're stuck with the Greek names and the Roman names, but it really represents, you know, Durga, Kali, all the underworld deities, the wrathful Dakinis. Let's say that all mythic figures are metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. And let's say that metaphor is the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. You know, so which is why we want our metaphors to be tangible. You know, again, I always use John O'Donohue, great late poet, Irish poet, you know, who says that the art form of blessing is when this, then may this. You know, when the ghost of loss stands behind you as you gaze out the window, then may the ancestors place a cloak of solace around your shoulders that will mend your life. And when your boat is sinking in rough waters, then may the moon spin a silver pathway upon which you may safely tread to shore. So this art of blessing, you know, and it's tangible. You know, and again, working with my Monday night team and different trickster trainings, I'll be giving one in Cortez Island this July, you know, where we work on all of these things that I'm presenting now. But, you know, we've, as a modern American culture, we've kind of lost metaphoric sensuality. So many spiritual teachers talk about, you know, enlightenment, happiness, and we go, where's the mango? Where's the cloak? Where's the thing? So people were pretty good at when this difficult thing, But when they got to then may this whatever, it got very abstract. Then may be happy. And I go, where's the cloak? Where's the mango? Where's the animal fur? That's what really makes it magic. And again, magnetizes, serves as an invitation for power to enter into the world. So the loss of animal spirit. So Mars is part of this dynamic. Okay, Uranus square, or Pluto square Uranus square Jupiter square Mars. They're squared. How do we get them all to dance together? So the energy is so strong, right, to step off it is to run right into it, fleck, 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 fleck. And we can feel that. You know, there's many ways in which we gather. Some of us are on Facebook. I don't know how many people are on Facebook or, wow, not many. Cool. Very few of us are on Facebook or Twitter, but it can be anywhere where you can see, you can feel where the energy starts to shift, you know, where it starts to go toxic at a moment, and you could get reactively involved, but you go, no, time to go home about a half hour ago, there we go. Or any small little thing, you know, a little skirmish with somebody, a little whatever, and you can feel the kind of reactive heat, and then you go, no, right? Call upon again. Cool head, warm heart. How do we be agents of cool in this hot, reactive world? So, the underworld, Pluto, which really represents the soil. You know, it's all the underworld. You know, qualities. It is soil, literally, and it also represents that which metabolizes poison. So we want to calling in all the mythic figures right now. You know, who are available to us. So how many people know of the wrathful Dakinis? The wrathful Dakinis, that's good. Well, they know about all of you. So the wrathful Dakinis pre-exist organized religion. Tibetan Buddhism gets a hold of them a little bit later and makes them pretty and ornamental, but they're not pretty, they're beautiful. And they were originally depicted as part woman, part animal, like all the cave paintings. And it's said of the wrathful Dakinis that they dance and laugh as they feast on the painful negativity that the unenlightened would take to be scary. Like, ah. So, ha, ha, ha. And they metabolize poison. They cook the poison of anger into the tonic of wrath, fierce protection of life. They cook the toxin of seduction and cook it into the tonic of magnetism, bring everything alive. You know, so the wrathful Dakinis, you know, we go, come on in, wrathful Dakinis. And that quality of, you know, inviting in Mars energy is in Libra, Venus's sign. Some old astrologers say, oh, that's its fall. We go, no, it's perfect. You know, it's again Mars with manners. Mars in retrograde appears to be moving backwards in Libra and Venus's sign. So let us retrograde, remember kinship, remember manners. We say manners are not some externally imposed, you know, kind of false etiquette. You know, it is intrinsic to respectful living on this planet. So the Mars dynamic says, yes, come on back in, you know, King Arthur, come on back in, all of that. But also the wrathful Dakinis, you know, to invite in, it says the energetic hero part of all of us says we don't always need to know what to do, but to invite in what does. You know, even a simple thing, you know, whatever is truly best for everyone in a particular circumstance, you know, come on in. And dedicated acts of beauty trump tyranny every time. So part of what I love from Dion Fortune's writings, Dion Fortune was a wonderful writer in the 40s in England, Kabbalistic scholar who ran a mystery school, but put the sum of her knowledge in these novels that are kind of occult. Hard to know what to call them exactly. But her main character is a priestess of Isis. And remember, this is 40s England. It's very trippy that she's laying this out. Priestess of Isis named Morgan Le Fay Morgan, who basically starts my favorite book, Moon Magic, by saying, I'm a priestess of Isis in the modern world, and this is what this means, and this is how. And that the purpose of ritual magic throughout time was for humans to invite in power and then spiral back into group collective human mind, expanded tolerance and wisdom. And that's what we can begin to do tonight as well, to spiral into group human mind. We are here now very safe. You know, we are safe to experiment with having responses. We know when we get into hot reactive circumstance, we know in the world now, there are many hot reactive circumstances. So what is the great beauty of our gathering here, we who do not have the pressure of having someone, you know, we love harmed in front of us, to expand into the memosphere, which is the realm of influence for the trickster, the memosphere, expanded download of responses, you know, to all those beings in hot circumstance that they can draw upon this. But there's a great moment in Moon Magic, Dionne Fortune's novel, where she's setting up these rituals, and just she gets to a point where just nothing's working, nothing's going right, and she's outside of her house, her temple, and nothing's right, and she's like, no, 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 no. And she goes back inside, and she sees the vase of yellow flowers that she'd put there with a dedication that it serve as an invitation for Isis to enter the world. And she sees the moon shining through the window, illuminating this vase of flowers. And she gets, you know, these goosebumps, and she can feel this incredible descent of energy, like, doof. And she goes, it didn't matter what my mind was doing. The dedicated act of beauty as an invitation had clearly been accepted. And in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts, doof. Which is this great antique phrase, you know, from esoterica, back on one's contacts. And so part of the beneficent bounty we're being offered right now is also the power of dedication. It says whatever we do, if we simply add dedication to that gesture, it turns it into a ritual of power and invitation, of invitation for power to enter into the world. So we say all ritual magic, you know, is symbolic. It is simply any physical act that we do that we imbue with symbolism. We can sweep the floor, or we can sweep the past out while we sweep the floor. So Saturn chimes in, Saturn, ruler of Pluto and Capricorn, chimes in and says, just by adding dedication to any simple, humble thing that we do, we imbue it with invitational power to invite in what is needed in this call and response. You know, again, that is so delighted. So this field, you know, that we're in, like, whoa, strong field. And we all, you know, I don't know anybody or any spiritual teacher has not been thrown by the high horse of their own teaching. We go, just back on the thing and rededicate. You know, and Pluto gives this cauldron into which to toss everything that is not equal. So it's a powerful time now of reinventing all teachings. You know, really, and it says nothing is so sacred that it doesn't want to be thrown into the bubbling cauldron and then going, is it equal? Is it equal Mars, Venus? Is it equal man, woman? Is it equal this species and the rest of our kin on this planet? Does it guide everyone to their own autonomy? Excellent, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in for another round. You know, talking to great practitioners of shamanism, and I say, well, you know, everything needs to be revitalized and reinvented. You know, shamanism in which the shaman, you know, journeys and retrieves somebody's soul. I go, isn't that kind of colonial? You know, what about people being guided to retrieve their own soul? And many of these shamans go, you're right. It wants a reframe. It wants a metaphoric reframe suitable for our time. You know, there are, you know, many great shamans, you know, but each tradition, each spiritual tradition has its own shadow. And Pluto in Capricorn says it is shadow dancing time. I mean, see if you feel that in your own life every befoiblement isn't present, like in some way, like, oh my God, there it is, or this thing I always do, or which is why, you know, even last week I was writing, doing my own trickster exercise, but just by writing out going, I am a dingbat. And then we add the magic word, I have been a dingbat until now, right? And then I have been researching being a dingbat in order to expand my realm of compassion. There we go, okay. But all of our befoiblements are very much up, but so are they in the world. And one of the shadows that goes with shamanism, you know, in its tradition, very good, but it has an addiction to having an enemy. You know, these people are out to get me, these larger forces, and we go, oh, throw it into the cauldron. Because we want to do some kind of brave, bold things, you know, and there's no harm in throwing anything into the cauldron. When in doubt, throw out, you know, and you can ladle it back out. But, you know, we'd say, you know, let's throw, you know, anything into the cauldron which is not, you know, full of democratic animism in some way. Let's, you know, throw that in there. And how about, you know, we might throw into the cauldron our addiction to having an enemy. Now, part of the strategy of now, Mars energy, spending a long time in Libra this year, you know, so that we can have manners. But in nature, spirals are what nature creates to resolve conflict. Whenever conflicting things come together, nature creates a spiral to resolve it. You know, in large things, galaxies, hair patterns, pouring cold moving cream into hot still coffee, hot smoke in a cool evening sky, you know, spirals. So Libra, so spirals are sacred to Venus. Venus forms a five-petaled, you know, shape in the sky over 8 years. In nature, the number five is what gives rise to spirals, again, to resolve conflict and bring new stability into being. You know, I asked a friend of mine who's a meteorologist, you know, what do hurricanes want? And being an intrinsic animist, as everyone is under the surface, he said, they want what we all want. They want peace. They're trying to resolve these conflicts to move to the North Pole to resolve it. So the bigger the storms, and we know they're getting bigger, simply is speaking to us about the larger imbalances that the hurricanes are trying to resolve in some way, these huge things. Yeah. I do, and that's a really large and interesting, you know, question. I think the HAARP is appropriate. I know those guys. I've hosted Mark Begich on the show. I think that's one true story. You know, Jupiter right now says, you know, there's 20, 30, 40 stories all going on at once every moment, and they can all be conflicting and they can all be true. But I think part of the shadow of that, and when people get, you know, hyperventilating and spell only in caps about chemtrails and HAARP, there may be truth to it, but it's also, there's a sneaky and even colonial abdication of human responsibility. Because part of the natural dynamic is, yeah, hurricanes, you know, yeah, yes, I do. The answer is, yes, I do absolutely think that this is a nature's appropriate, nature's natural response. That this is, it is man-made in a deeper, more important, more responsible to all of us kind of way. So, yeah, I do. But I know this is a longer conversation and people can be very devoted to their particular story. We're for many, many stories all at once to be able to, again, cross borders. You know, and it is always useful in a story, you know, to present, you know, because many of us may have been in circumstances where conflict would ensue. I remember the first Gulf War where I went to a gathering of people and of artists, and I assumed that it was all about how can we stop this. But people were mouthing platitudes like, well, at least it's smart bombs and we had no other choice. I'm like, ah! So I was not tremendously effective. And people were like, and a wonderful friend of mine said later, she said, you know, nobody really reacts badly when you say, did you know? Did you know that the Kuwaitis were slant drilling oil? Did you know that if one's used one's herumphitude composter? Did you know? So it is useful, you know, in any story that one loves to be able to go, did you know? You know, because again, you know, part of our ally etiquette we're putting on the table if we want to be agents of democratic animism and cultural renaissance or colonialism, you know, is our manner of relating an offering serves liberation or an imposition serves colonialism and empire, no matter what label we stick on our ass. So did you know, see again, is an infinite game, keeps the whole thing playing. Because no one reacts badly to that, like, oh, I did know that, or no, I did not know that. You know, so the more we know, the more effective agents we are for whatever it is we love, whatever it is we're assigned. You know, and I also, you know, I know people, just even backstage conversation, I go, I'm interested in throwing into the cauldron all tired language and metaphors that may have been useful but maybe not, or throw them into the cauldron just for the fun of it. So I like, you know, throwing the use of the word wound as a metaphor into the cauldron, going, bless its little heart, it served such a long time, you know. But how about ladling out instead one's medicine? So for instance, rather than saying my wound, one would say my medicine that I have to contribute. It's like pagans say that scars in our body is where power enters the world. What if we thought emotional scars, physical scars, is where we've become powerful, as opposed to, whoa. You know, Brecht has a great essay called Five Obstacles to Telling the Truth that I like to turn into five opportunities for telling the truth. You know, and but he says the story that flummoxes good-hearted people says, we are good-hearted people, we come up against, you know, what I like to call the Dementors of Doom, and we are crushed by the evil forces, you know, whatever. And Breck says, we got to quit telling the story about how the good is weak. As water is wet, the good is weak. We want to tell the stories about how the good is strong. And so see, the polarizing us, them, you know, in any kind of particular mythos, you know, again, serves that conflict. It's like this John Michael Greer, an interesting druid whom I've hosted on the radio, but he says, if you want to get nothing done but conflict, convince people they're on one side of something, and you will only get conflict. You know, what two needs is three, which is the unifying story. You know, even in speaking, the reason I go, you know, talk across borders, you know, also to, you know, GMO people and everything, even though I have to use my Hrom Fatud composter quite a lot, like, oh, it's got to go. So Bill Gates and, you know, powerful science people and, you know, and complicated, match up to no good, but they say, you know, if you're against GMOs, you want to starve people in Africa. And we go, and so one reaches in and goes, we share your concern about Africa. We are united that all people be well fed. We think that the manner in which you're going, but this is our unifying thing. We're going to start there and work backwards. And did you know about that? And so to better serve our goal, our shared goal, you know, of feeding all beings on this planet, then, you know, then here's, did you know about this? And did you know about that? And did you know about that? But again, it's the spiral to step into the center. So yeah, no, the spiral, I think, is crucial Aikido that we want to kind of practice when things are cooler. You know, because when they get hot, then we get thrown back into habit and reaction. So let's be willing again to throw all old reaction, you know, into the cauldron and ladle out this cool repertoire of responses, you know, and a willingness to be, you know, agents of liberation. So, you know, in the which is why the mythologies, you know, are abounding now. I view, you know, colonialism can be so sneaky in the way it kind of insinuates itself. So for me, you know, anything that says, you know, we are part of the seven illumined, you know, brotherhood of the great Huza Huza, whatever, and I go, sounds like colonialism to me, you know, this specialness. So we want to throw specialness into the cauldron and ladle out uniqueness. Because each person who cultivates their uniqueness encourages everybody to cultivate their uniqueness. And we want everybody's uniqueness. You know, specialness is celebrity passivity. You know, so again, you know, quickening and awakening. And so I do welcome talking across borders, because and each time we get pretty good, you know, the degree of difficulty gets ratcheted up. So I used all my frequent flyer miles at one point to upgrade to business class so I could talk to warmongers. And people doing bad things, you know, going humma. So the first time, you know, I had my seatmate was a Cisco Systems who proudly said that, you know, they had all the contracts in Iraq and all the eye scanning, you know, surveillance. You know, and it's like, oh, and he goes, oh, no, no, technology, you know, could be very good. And I go, oh, keep my name out of that thing, you know, whatever. And I said, when did you get the contracts for Iraq? And he said, oh, in the late summer, fall of 2000. I'm like, ah, bastards. Okay, but by the end of the plane, by the end of the plane ride, he was quitting his job and starting a B&B. So my work was done there. you know, did you know? Did you know? And then the next time I had, you know, a general teaching military intelligence, you know, at Berkeley, and I was like, huh. All wars are failures of imagination. He goes, well, I can't go with you on that one, but this war is. And I go, well, we'll start there. And then he said, well, you're speaking to me, you know, I mean, you work for Pacifica Radio, but you're speaking to me with, you know, kind of, you know, respect and engagement. And I go, yeah. He's like, that's such a surprise. We go, well, yeah, let's find a common thing. Let's find a common thing. Now, to be fully aware of up to no goodness, but again, there's no agency, there's no anything, no corporation where there isn't someone to be spoken to, some part of someone. And we do it as an experiment. You know, Uranus represents nature's evolutionary ingenuity that has zero category about success-fail. It's just try stuff, try stuff, try stuff. You know, nature does not worry about what humans will think. You know, if nature puts big ears on this mammal, nature just goes, I'm going to put big ears on this mammal and see if the little critter lasts for a couple million years. You know, just try it. Try it. So we try things and go, no, that wasn't so good. No, that was amazing, you know. So we experiment. Again, this quality of ingenuity that we want to bring into play. Now, part of why we're gathered here also is to animate the opportunities being so generously proffered to us, because if we leave them, they can easily be inhabited, you know, by the Dementors of Doom. And right now, as we gather, the sun has just set. It's this beautiful time, and it's at 6 degrees of Taurus. There's 30 degrees to every sign. Every sign has a metaphor associated with it, and 6 degrees of Taurus is this beautiful image. It's the woman of Samaria at the ancestral well, you know, healing cross-cultural encounters about sharing water. Beautiful. But I notice it in kind of tracking history and politics that the first 9/11 event in this country was September 11th, 1858. And September 11th, 1858 was when the Mormons attacked a settlement group and massacred them. The Mormons dressed as Indians, a false flag operation, were dressed as Indians. They dressed up as Indians, and they slaughtered these white settlers. But what was especially even cruel about the setup is they surrounded the settlers and then said, we know you're out of water. Here, we will give you safe passage to go fill your water supplies at this well. And they did that and then killed them all on the way to getting the water. At that time, Pluto was at 6 degrees of Taurus, the woman of the at the ancestral well, healing cross-cultural encounters. And we go, no, that was the Dementor, toxic, demonic, anti-animation of that desirable thing, which we're here to redress as medicine people. When Trayvon Martin was murdered in Florida by George Zimmerman, it was an extraordinary chart, and it's like, oh, if only they had looked up, if only they looked up, the sky was so beautiful, the moon and Jupiter were conjoined at 6 degrees Taurus. It was meant to be about healing cross-cultural encounters. You know, and I loved an Episcopalian minister, you know, said, I want to live in a world where George Zimmerman offered Trayvon Martin a ride home in the rain. We go, that animation. You know, find this and replace it with that. You know, so we have Pluto and we have Uranus. Let me introduce Neptune as part of this whole dynamic keeper of the frame story. So Neptune is in home sign now of Pisces, which it's in every 168 years. So we're being offered evolutionary advantages, meaning all powerful myths and dreams and beautiful music and all that has ever inspired, you know, humans and human to animal and plant kinship is available to each one of us. And Neptune has this beautiful degree. It's stationing right now. It looks like it's standing still at 7+ Pisces, which is, you know, a woman with a trumpet calling in a new tide of cultural energy. And we go, oh, how beautiful. So Neptune is dreams, vision, the truth, and understanding that we're all in this large, pulsing, living dream together. And I just finished reading a pretty great novel by Elizabeth Gilbert, who had written Eat, Pray, Love, and her novel, The Signature of All Things. I don't know if anybody's read that, no. But it's pretty great. A woman, long 19th century heroine, botanist. But she is working on her theory of evolution before Darwin, and then Darwin's comes out, and she goes, oh, Darwin's evolution of species was so beautiful. And he doesn't mention humans at all in that book. You know, people will get all right. But she, as a character, says, but what Darwin didn't account for, even though he's been much misrepresented, is what about altruism? You know, in this competition of species and life forms, what about altruism? And Neptune is the increasing availability of altruism, meaning if we understand that we're all in this dream together, you know, and it's also how do we be effective? You know, I worked with a wonderful dream coach, Donna Graham in West Virginia, many, many ways of working with dreams. But the way that she worked with dreams is that nobody could interpret anybody else's dream, that somebody would tell their dream, and then she would coach them to tell the dream in which every part of the dream was them. So somebody would say, I dreamed I ran into a friend of mine outside my house. And Donna would say, when's the last time you saw that friend? And they'd go, oh, 30 years ago when I was in college. So Then she would guide them to say, I dreamed I talked with a part of myself I hadn't spoken to in 30 years at a time when I was learning. And then you could see also people's resistance. A woman would dream about a tornado, and then resistance and then relief to go, I dreamed about the wild and dangerous part of myself. And you could see people coming often in a not shared way, but into kind of real understanding. So I love taking that out into the dream news. You know, we dreamed the news. We dreamed that the Israeli parts of ourselves were, you know, doing this to the Palestinian parts of ourselves. We dreamed that the ignorant white part of ourselves was burning down the black Christian church part of ourselves. We dreamed that the, you know, the scientist parts of ourselves were thinking of manipulating the weather parts of all of that, taking it into this incredibly deeper layer of creative complicity, that we're all dreaming the world together. And complicity means not shame, not blame, but just acknowledging the potency that we all have together, that whatever is going on in whatever circumstance, we are complicitous, we are giving it chi. But once we realize that, we can inhale our chi back from that and exhale it into a better story. And we can be inviters of that. We can see people behaving badly or parts of ourselves behaving badly and go, I invite you to go backstage for a costume change. And the idea of story rewrite, being able to rewrite the story. This is why, you know, politics and metaphysics love each other. Our word idiot comes from Greek, idiotos. It meant somebody who was so irresponsible as to not participate in politics. That's what the word idiot means. And see, part of the beauty of this astrological language is to insource what we've been outsourcing. You know, as we come to Saturn, leadership and authority, and this again is a traditional time before an eclipse, what do we want to be eclipsed? By what? You know, where cultures would then re-examine leadership and say, you know, we've been outsourcing leadership and power, you know, to people who have, you know, to sociopathic dingbats who have formally cut off their connection with others. The initiation, the toxic mimic of initiation rituals done at Yale and in Skull and Bones, to which we outsource political and economic power to those guys. You know, the ritual is this feeling, these feelings of kinship in me are weak, I kill them. That's the ritual that they do. And that's the people who go, well, then you can be president, and you can have power, and you can run the world, and you can be in charge of Harper, whatever the thing is. So part of the deeper dynamic is we're going to inhale, you know, wherever we've outsourced leadership to sociopathic dingbats who've lost a sense of kinship, we want to inhale it back in, you know, and invite them to a better, invite all of ourselves to a better story. So that's part of the dynamic. But Neptune and Pisces, the field of altruism again, you know, where, you know, the altruistic theorists, you know, are talking about humans who sacrifice themselves, but we see so much of that in the animals that we are, as a species, killing. Our incredible, relentless, and appalling attack on wolves is a breaking of a crucial treaty, because wolves, maybe more than any other creatures that we know, are the embodiment of really great leadership. You know, for years I've always loved that, and I lived with a wolf, part wolfy dog, and Michael Fox, head of the Humane Society, said, wolves don't operate on dominance, they operate on charisma. And in wolf culture, charisma means who initiates play best. Not just play, let's go hunting, but play is very big, and theater as well. We're not the only species that has theater. The alpha wolf, often a female, you can tell the alpha wolf within 10 days of birth because it's the wolf pup with the lowest resting heartbeat. So it's the coolest and calmest and the one who engages the ingenuity of the pack. And we go, that's a pretty great leadership dynamic. I mean, wouldn't we like to have that as our criterion for leadership, the coolest and calmest and the one who engages the ingenuity in the pack? And also to see that, you know, the only channel I really completely love is you know, Esther Hicks channeling Abraham or whatever she's doing, because her language is so great. But something I keep always with me in my magic backpack, she says, we can't, you know, fight anybody effectively or, you know, convince them or you know, whatever, or imprison them or bomb them into anything. We can see them connected to their own wise autonomy. And this is part of the experimental dynamic. I mean, I do aspire to practice all these things, you know, and then go, by Jiminy, what I'm talking about is actually true. What a relief. But in small things or large, you know, even, you know, just in back of me at a concert, people talking loudly and rudely. So at first, right, you want to go, shh, right? But then you've got that tension story going, you know, and if we admit it, you know, when we're criticizing somebody, you know, we're kind of waiting and almost hoping for them to do it again so we can do that thing. You know, they're throwing litter on the ground. They're doing, they're still waiting to go, as opposed to going, I see them connected to their wise sense of appropriate decorum with the people in back of me, rather than go, you know, because then you have the awkwardness of intermission and then you have the escalation, and if you're in Florida, then you get shot. You know, and then to go, no, and really within moments, quiet it down, seeing, you know, the power of blessing. You know, Jupiter's part of this whole dynamic, which is the power of blessing. And Jupiter says, what is the one way of relating to the world and everything in it that is guaranteed replenishing and never depleting? And Jupiter says, blessing, may it go well for you. You know, and part of, if we think about the colonizer seeks the medicine of what he colonizes. You know, England needed the metaphysic of India, but it conquers it. We in this country need underneath the roiling the incredible lyrical beauty and art form of blessing that is so much a part of the Middle East, underneath all the colonial wars on top. You know, blessing, may it go well for you. And, you know, to put it kind of on our manifesto of dedicated devotion, and we do get thrown by our horse. You know, I because I put these standards out and go, you know, we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. It's all a collaborative call and response, which is why when we make ourselves a dedicated art form, and this is a great and powerful time to do it, you know, we're saying, this is what I want to be. You know, hold me to it, you know? And then, you know, and then the fun begins because, you know, when I forget to bless, when I get involved in criticizing somebody internally or externally, I do get bonked on the nose, you know, pretty much. You know, again, it's a small example. I was just, you know, these small things and large things, the conflagration of the world and then into the micro of our circumstance. There was somebody in a coffee shop who just came in and was really rude to the woman behind the counter. Not rude to me, just rude. And I was harumphy. I was like, oh, and I got all kind of inveigled in that thing. And I did not bless her. I did not see her connected to her own wise, calm autonomy. I was like, oh, and I wasted some time, which resulted in the meter guy writing me a $50 ticket right there, going, oh, $50 fine for not blessing somebody. Thank you. You know, and then another $50 fine for yelling at the meter guy, going, I hope you get a better job. And he was like, I hope so too. And I go, right, it was almost a blessing, but a snarky tone. Charge me another $50 for that. You know, so this again, call and response, going, right, because again, that's why we want to begin to practice these things so they're like greased lightning. Because within this grand square, the power of stories to guide our elegance, the power of borrowing from nature rather than looting nature, the whole realm of biomimicry, you know, of ingenious solutions to toxic things. You know, Mars is our energy. It's the energy we run on metaphorically, but it's also the energy our culture runs on in the form of fuel. And it is connected to animals, and instinct is our fuel that we use respectful. You know, is it good for all beings? And, you know, it's true, we're heading into, you know, the destruction of so much life, the destruction of so much habitat, you know, and it is against all odds. But again, it's this wildly opportune time if we, you know, it's come to this. We now have to do what we want to do. We now have to be, you know, what we want to be. It's like, oh, darn, okay, all right, we'll do that. So there in the middle of this square, again, guiding stories, calling in, syncretizing from all the animals we love. I mean, I lived with a wonderful wolf. I love wolf. You know, I want to be more wolf. I lived for 16 years with Stella Coyote, ongoing. She's still damn frisky, a half coyote dog. So I love coyote medicine, very different from wolf. You know, wolves are, you know, very much, you know, they're very mannered, they're very disciplined. What we call wildness is incredibly disciplined. To be a disciplined wild person is to be like nature. Wolves are incredibly disciplined and structured, you know, as well as charismatic. So with the wolf dog, I mean, he really is so polite and mannered. He goes, you know, I see by the fence here that that symbolizes your preference that I stay here, and therefore I will do that. The coyote says, you know, I think a wall would be, a door would be useful for me, and just eats her way through the wall. Go, very different cultures. I love both very much. I love the ravens. We love these different things. We've got some of us, you know, a wonderful friend was on a journey where we were off it with the gray whales of San Ignacio Lagoon. And again, from their medicine, you know, to be like them, to be humbly capable of drawing medicine from each different thing that we love and that we admire, so that we can weave a cloak of our own animistic wisdom to wear around us, and even this night before we go forth, our own customized, unique, you know, calling upon everyone, every piece of literature, you know, everyone in fairy tales, our bloodline or history or myth that has inspired us or been dedicated to something to which we are similarly dedicated. But the medicine I draw from the gray whales of San Ignacio Lagoon, which is this extraordinary place in Baja, and it's a birthing lagoon where, of course, for centuries humans would go to kill the whales as they were giving birth. Terrible. And then, you know, it was on the day when the United Nations was passing a Marine Mammal Protection Act that Pancho Pacheco was in his little boat, Pancho Mayoral, excuse me, was in his little boat, little local fisherman, and a gray whale, they're big, you know, twice the size, 40 feet, you know, came up beside him, and he was terrified because they were called the devilfish because they would protect their young when they were being attacked, and they would smash these boats. So this giant whale comes up beside him, and he's terrified because they would kill humans who were attacking them. But it was gentle, and it just stayed there and wouldn't go away until he began to pat it, and it liked that. And I guess it did whatever the whale version of purring is. And then since that moment, the whales, not all, but quite a number of them, would come up to boats, approach people, and present their babies. And so people began to go there, and scientists would go there and go, I think the whales are forgiving us. You know, and it is extraordinary, because these, you know, everybody weeps, because the gaze of animals, the direct gaze, it's like we need this gaze. We would be nothing as a species without wolves as our evolutionary allies. You know, it was part of a deal, a collaborative deal. You go into the cave to see about saber-toothed tigers and we'll give you some cooked meat, okay? It's a long relationship that we are severing. And what does it mean that we're killing, you know, animals that most represent the qualities of leadership that we most want? We want to inhale. But so the gray whales, this extraordinary encounter, and then Mitsubishi Corporation was going to, had received Mexican government approval to build a salt manufacturing factory in this precious lagoon where, again, the gray whales mate and give birth in their long and arduous Arctic to Baja journey. And it was terribly sad, and many, many great environmentalists took to the courts. Again, yay, environmental lawyers, and many humans were working on it. And then as Pancho Mayoral's son told us, and the president of Mexico had approved it, but the fishermen got together and said, before the final approval, please, oh, President of Mexico, come out in the boats with us, with your wife and your child. And Pancho said, the whales knew what they had to do. He said, they'd never been so friendly. They came up, and the president's wife and child were just weeping with the delight of it, because it does, it makes you weep, you just weep. And his heart melted, and he rescinded, you know, the corporate decision. And so with the environmentalists doing the hard work, and then the whales. And so what I like to say to our team, the whales did not come up to the president of Mexico and go, you runny dog lackey for, you know, imperialism, you terrible tyrant. They go, no, we're going to melt your heart. We're going to melt your heart. You know, and for us to not contribute to the hyper-yang death frenzy that is so prevalent in the world, you know, it is useful for us to humbly borrow medicine from the gray whales, who, again, with a living memory of having been slaughtered at their most vulnerable, knew that the most effective way was to go, hello, hello, and we go, oh, this is so beautiful. And again, so from all of the different animals, we want to, you know, borrow these qualities, you know, to encourage each other. you know, the playfulness of the whales, because they come up, these magnificent beings, and again, there was no, yes. That is one true story. I love your parrot. What is your parrot's name?
Harry.
Harry, that's great. So you have your wise animal ally right there. That is a true story. But let me give you again, internal dedication. That is absolutely a true story. There's a number of responses to that. One is part of the power of now, you know, convincingly disguised as, you know, the San Mateo event center. We are convening an Asclepion right here. And Jupiter trining Chiron, trining Saturn, which is a cultural center that existed throughout the ancient world of intentional dreaming, healing, and theater. And fierce blessing, you know, may all those abusing power be moved to a place that can no longer harm themselves by harming others, is very effective as an experiment. But also, in keeping with that truth, I go, yes, and Neptune also says, we wonder, let us wonder. Because wonder as a physical mudra, you know, turns our body into a beseeching chalice of invitational inquiry, and it tends to attract, you know, serendipitous synchronicity. So that is a true thing. But when I was at CPAC with strange allies and dementors, you know, my friend said, let's sneak you into the Ronald Reagan, you know, cocktail party before the banquet. And I'm like, okay, I'll go anywhere. I was wearing a wolf totem necklace, otherwise dressed as my, and this person came up and was just sort of magnetized and said, I own the largest boat privately owned in the world. I go, well, you must love the ocean. He was like, I do. I hadn't thought about that, but I do. And then I told him about, you know, wolves and models of leadership, and he goes, this is so great. I haven't had a conversation like this in years. You know, I used to love like Joseph Campbell and everything. Come be my date at the Reagan banquet. I was like, okay, so there I am. I even have pictures to prove it. You know, with some of the most horrible dementors in the world. I mean, I can't even remember Scott Brown and everybody going, whew, whew. But anyway, so I'm talking to this person. And he's like, oh, this is a conversation that I haven't had in a long time. Okay, so his mythic self is being fed and it's coming up now. Partly through the dinner, you could see this, and there's a photograph to prove it, that his dementor isolated self, you know, a Republican, is like trying to stop this party. No, 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 no. And there's this war going on in his mind, going, my mythic self and my whatever self, you know, and he blurts out at one point, George W. Bush, one of the best presidents in history. I'm like, wow, pull out my Harumphatut composter. And I go, as long as I've known you, which was like 40 minutes, I said, I've never heard you say such a silly thing. I don't think you even believe it. I think you're possessed. And he's like, possessed? And he wasn't affronted. He was surprised by the term. And I go, well, there's, you know, these things that possess people and keep them from creative thinking, you know. But because he had taken a photo and sent it to me, I see his underling says CEO Petroleum Inc. I go, oh my God. But he's you know, and he says many terrible things as well, but he goes, but that thing, you know, about the ocean and the thing about the whatever. So because I had his email, and I had turned him, you know, into a kind of cartoon, although he really wanted to have that mythological conversation, and the way in which he put it, he said, this part of me has not been spoken to or fed in 40 years, and I really want. But because I had his email, I sent him Avery Lovin's, you know, green energy policy that Amory's presenting to the military, which there's a lot of interesting things going on in the military. Again, I'm talking to these guys, so they're not just monolithic, like whatever. A lot of people getting out of the military want, you know, again, you know, say in reverence, they want to create a green economy. They want, I mean, it's a whole larger, interesting thing. But I sent him Amory Lovin's, you know, energy policy, and he wrote back this kind of reflective thing, and he said, You know, I remember Amory from the early 70s when I too was working on solar panels. But what I don't trust in Amory's thing is I don't trust his numbers. I don't trust his numbers about the economy. So I go back to our team and I go, the Dementors, they want numbers. Give them numbers. Give them numbers about how in the longer term this is a more viable economy. As Catherine Austin Fitz says, you know, even evil crooks could make more money making a neighborhood beautiful than stripping it of all of its life. You know, again, the story. You know, and he's like, but I'll take this under reflection, and if you can set up a meeting between me and Amory, whatever. So it's not to refute at all what you're saying. It's to honor what you're saying as true. But I'm saying Trickster is willing to negotiate around that. You know, there's the 1% thing and the isolation thing and the whatever. But serendipity throws things together in a curious way. There's probably a number of other things. But something again, I tell a lot, but I love it so much about the power of story and the power of backstage and the power of this evening and the power of the Asclepion. And it is, you know, our capacity to liberate ourselves and others from an undesirable story. And so it's a man I met who was working at the UN and was in charge of all refugee camps. And something that was true then several years ago and that is even truer now is that there are no tents available. We live in a world of refugees, refugee people, refugee animals. Homes are being destroyed, increasing crisis. In a weird way, the military takes global warming completely seriously. Or global warming is not even the right term, cataclysmic climate change. Because they see it as, you know, just the structure is going to break down for everybody. But this man who worked at the UN told me about the most terrifying time in his life. His colleagues had been kidnapped and murdered the week before. I think it was Zaire. And he was walking down the street with other colleagues, and they were kidnapped. They were stuffed into the back of a van, and men with AK-47s and bloodshot eyes were pointing guns, you know, at them. But he said, and he really thought he was going to die. But he said to his colleagues, "We've got to change the story. We're not being kidnapped. We're being protected." So they began to thank their captors. "Thank you. Oh, what a relief. Thank you so much for picking us up in this really complicated situation. Whew, what a relief." And their captors were puzzled at first. Unexpected. See, unexpected breaks the story. And that night when they locked them up, the captors said, "We're putting a guard outside. Don't worry, so you'll be safe." And then 3 days later, let them go. So as an experiment, believe nothing. Entertain possibilities, but to take away in our magic backpack the capacity for immediate story rewrite. Going, an unpleasant story, you go, wait a minute, time out, backstage, we're rewriting. You're no longer hooligans, 1%, thugs, murderers, you know, now, in this case, now you're protectors, we're no longer hapless, you know, victims, now we're clueless tourists. Okay, back on stage. You know, everybody, you know, story rewrite at any point. So to avail ourselves of experimenting, which is why I find so many of our good-hearted team, you know, suffering from magic deficiency, which is colonized mind. You know, people so eager to not be colonized that they are complicitous in hoodwinking themselves in some ways. And all that that means is availing ourselves of what is intrinsic to our capacity, you know, to collaborate with everything and to experiment in that way. There's a Tahitian phrase that says, it is a dangerous and mighty destiny to be born at night. And we go, well, in a sense, we're all born at night to navigate these dark mystery realms. It's an honor to be navigating and incarnationally coinciding now when so much is at stake, but so much creativity. And part of the play is, again, in your magic backpack that you get to take home with you, invisible though it be, this comes from a wonderful comedian, Eddie Izzard, who says, Star Trek, a very advanced civilization, and yet their phasers only had two settings, stun or kill. We want more phaser settings. Like sudden interest in botany setting. I will kill you. Oh my, look at that. Oh, it's so beautiful. I will destroy the world. Oh no, I do love the ocean. Oh my goodness. You know, I will just, you know, so again, thinking of other settings, you know, find and replace, you know, colonialism with democratic animism, you know, or Eddie Izzard also had left kettle on at home setting. I will kill you. Oh, wait a minute. God, okay. So to prime the pump of our own creativity, you know, and again, we go, you know, and to spiral in surprising ways. And it's not to be run over. Aikido says that, you know, he or she who, the aggressor always loses. That's something that's amplified by Mars and Libra right now. The aggressor always loses. And that might always be true, but you don't get run over, you know. But, and you don't resist. The resistance also creates the polarity. Like the person who resists also loses. But you do use your opponent's energy to step out of the way and go. You want to go that way? Keep going that way. You spiral. You know, Morihei Ueshiba in the brilliant guiding book, The Art of Peace, says, do not stare at your enemy's weapon, he will terrify you. Do not stare into his eyes, he will mesmerize you. Create your own field, and then you can stand anywhere you like. So for us, the critique is important, and then the animating of the guiding desirable story, so that we begin to, all of us, assume cultural narrative lead, not just reacting, like, oh, that's horrible, but to go, that's horrible, and here's where we're going, come on. James Carson, his book, Finite and Infinite Games, says the Renaissance was not primarily against anybody, it was this magnetic inclusivity of inviting the ingenuity of humans to create, you know, and to honor the power of nature. That way, they were going that way. So we want to, you know, kind of play with that. So the power of symbolic also, the word symbolic, sim means together and bol means to throw. Symbolic means you throw together. And my friend who pointed that out said, either we have a symbolic way of understanding and participating in the world or a diabolic world thrown apart. You know, and we say so many myths and cooperators are standing by, you know, we know that you know, the Grail legend did not end, it was put on pause, and we want to hit play. We know that we do not want so much rules as guiding encouragements. The Asclepions really did exist, and right now Chiron, little planetary being, you know, is part of this whole beautiful dance. Within this grand square is a beautiful, what's called grand trine in water. Again, all natural facts, let they be social strategy metaphors. You know, the more you slow water down when you run it through a field, the faster it infiltrates. So for our team of good-hearted people, always recruiting, when we gather in some ways to slow down, the faster we infiltrate. You know, and Jupiter would say to each one of us, I will make you wealthy person by your own definition of wealth, which is not limited to money. What do you want to feel like, and what do you want to feel like to others? You write it, we'll book it. So there's no right answer. It can go on for pages. We might want to be influential. You know, we go famous, no, but influential, yes. You know, and we leave it then to the gods. You know, as we dedicate, we strengthen our signal, so that we're more likely to be danced into place with those with whom we're in accord, you know, in order to do this. And also whatever comes to us then is something that we're invited to liberate, not count on it, okay? Again, your points are well taken. Expectation is the partner of disappointment. We don't count on changing the hardened hearts of everyone, but we're willing. Uranus, the trickster, again, turns to us in cahoots with Jupiter and says, I'm going to connect each one of you to the coolest thing possible, inwardly and outwardly, and all I want from you is willingness. We are willing, you know. Well, let's just do it together. We are willing. We're almost willing. Well, 5 minutes. Okay. That sign said 5 minutes. We are willing. Again, because that's also, you see, if we're expecting about anything, you know, expecting to meet, you know, a fun person, expecting to meet a good, whatever, expectation, disappointment. But if we're willing, then we are agents of liberation rather than carrying around a portable disappointment prison. So it says, you know, let us be artists of atmosphere. Neptune is the invisible tendrils that waft out into culture that precede actual molecular change. You know, and for all of us, it says there's a sea change. We can feel it. We want to absolutely critique, but to be agents of that. You know, envisioning the desirable story tends to attract the molecules of its realization. My favorite new etymological discovery is that the word respect means to look at again. Respect. re-again-spect. So it's the antidote for prejudice. Prejudice means to have an opinion before one has a full story. And the black Christian teachings in the South say there's no one we couldn't love if we really knew their story. What if we replaced a desire for punishment, like the whales, with a desire to heal? Goodness, how did your heart come to be so hardened? Let us send you away to jazz saxophone camp or homeopathy, and you know, let judges deliver sentences by throwing the I Ching. Let's in our own selves, you know, be able to find and replace any desire to punish with a desire to heal. You know, this quality. The friend says, when High John arrives in our bosom, all is forgiven. And I like redefining the word forgive, so it doesn't mean condone. If we redefine the word forgive as to mean to give energy for change, who couldn't we forgive if it means to give energy for change? You know, to each one of us, small things, using a styrofoam cup. I forgive myself. I give myself energy to not do that again. You know, for large things, you know, we could forgive George W. Bush if it means to give energy for change. So, you know, spiraling forth these imaginative blessings, the Asclepions that we get to convene, Chiron, you know, was a mythic figure who founded a real thing, the Asclepions. Throughout human history, we have mythic figures founding real things. Demeter founds the Eleusinian Mysteries. And the Asclepions were cultural centers, and they're available now in the memesphere, where people went at a time of deep despair and confusion. They would drink rhodiola root tea to bring themselves into balance. They would intend Saturn to have a dream, Neptune. They'd have an amazing dream. They'd realize they'd only have the power of that dream if they gave it expression. So they would write a poem, participate in a play, paint something. Then they'd have the power of it, and they'd go back to their communities as seed Renaissance people. May it be so for all of us. You know, so two last things. You know, why not, you know, say with me Homer's Odyssey, the journey home. You know, people working with veterans say the Odyssey is a manual for how you take veterans home. It takes 20 years. And we might say that the hyper-yang death frenzy of the world is uninitiated Mars. You know, we're just a very recent human culture that has not initiated Mars. And we say Mars is about, you know, manners and the green man and gentleness. So we might say, sing to me, O muse.
Sing to me, O muse.
And through me, tell the story. And then there's a fabulous Amharic word from Ethiopia, Aizan, which means the inviting in of the powerful magic that comes in dangerous times, you know, that gives us the strength in any noble undertaking. And the word is Aizan. And then from the French circus theater, the wonderful word Alley-oop, which means we assist each other. One, two, three, Alley-oop. Thank you, team.